Sorry. So, yeah, we continue with our seminar. And today we are hearing about quite a big demon. His name is Agasura. And he represents also a very deep and big anatta, very important one. Agasura represents cruelty and violence caused by envy, unwillingness to help others by giving Krishna consciousness. So in his previous life, Agasura was already named Aga. He had the same name, and he was the son of Sankachuda. He had a very attractive body, and he was very proud of the beauty of his body. But he also liked to judge others. And one day he saw Astavakra Muni. Asta means eight, and Vakra means curb. So Astavakra Muni actually had a very ugly body, and his body was curbed in eight places. And when Aga saw Astavakra Muni, he made fun of him. He started to laugh and make fun of him. And obviously Astavakra Muni did not like so much this and gave him a curse. He said, because you are so proud of your beautiful body and you are criticizing everyone who is not as beautiful as you, you will get the body of a very ugly snake and you will have many more curves than what I have myself. But when Aga received the curse, he just fell at the feet of Astavakra Muni and begged for pardon. Please forgive me, please forgive me. And Astavakra Muni gave him the blessings. Okay, I cannot take away the curse I gave you, but I give you the blessings that you will be freed by the touch of Krishna. Later, Agasura became the king of a province in South India. And one day Kamsa came. Kamsa was a very, very powerful king also, and he came to South India to conquer the place. And he asked, Agasura, you become my servant. You become under my rulership. And Agasura did not like, so there was a big fight, and Kamsa won the fight and took Agasura around his neck and brought Agasura to Mathura as one of his servants. And after seeing how Vatsasura, Bakasura, Trinavarta, they all failed to kill Krishna, now Kamsa is sending Agasura to Braj for this mission of killing Krishna. So one morning, Krishna had the desire to have a picnic party.
What?
A picnic party. So he went to Mother Yasoda and he said, oh, auspicious one, today I want to take my meal in the forest. So please do not turn my request down. So Mother Yasoda turned her head like this and said, no, 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 no. Mother Yasoda did not want this picnic party. And Krishna said, Mother, if you do not allow me to go, then in the name of God, I will go anyway. So Mother Yasoda agreed. And that morning, Krishna was well fed. And then he came out of the house, blue in his buffalo horn, and then a million of cowboy and millions of calf run toward Krishna's house, ready to go to the forest. There were all those boys, they were having their lunch bags ready for their picnic. They had sticks, horns, flute, and they all look extremely beautiful. And from this place, I like to read the third verse of this chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called The Killing of the Demon Aga. Very, very beautiful purport we will have here. Krishna vatsar asankhyatai yuti kritasva vatsakan karayanto ripali labir vijarus tatra tatraha. Translation. Along with the cowherd boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves assembled. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Purport. In this verse, the words Krishna Vatsai Asankhyatai are significant. The word Asankhyata means unlimited. We know Sankhya means the science of counting, and Asankhya means unnumerable. You just cannot count. So Krishna's calves were unlimited. We may speak of hundreds, thousands, ten thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions, trillions, tens of trillions, and so on. But when we go further to speak of numbers impossible for us to count, we are speaking of unlimited numbers. Such unlimited numbers are indicated here by the word Asankhyata. Krishna is unlimited. His potency is unlimited. His cows and calves are unlimited. And his space is unlimited. Therefore, he is described in Srimad Bhagavad Gita as Param Brahman. The word Brahman means unlimited. And Krishna is the supreme unlimited Param Brahman. Therefore, we should not consider the statement of this verse to be mythological. They are factual, but inconceivable. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves and an unlimited measurement of space. And here again, Prabhupada repeats, this is not mythological, nor false. But if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, that potency will never be possible to understand. Atta Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grayam Indriyai from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Our senses cannot perceive how he could keep an unlimited number of calves and cows and have unlimited space in which to do so. By this is answered in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Evam prabho priyanam cha damnascha sammayasya cha avinchitya prabhavatvad atra kinchit nadurgatam. Sri Sanatana Goswami in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita states that since everything about Krishna is unlimited, nothing is impossible for him. It is in this sense that we have to understand this verse. So Radhanath Swami said, give also a comment on this Asankhyata, this unlimited number of cows and cowherd boys. Radhanath Swami said, let us meditate and contemplate on this achintya shakti of the Lord, this inconceivable potency of the Lord, this unlimited potency of Krishna. And then Radhanath Swami said, in one way, Krishna is covering his supremacy when he's in Braj. He's actually hiding his Aishvarya. because as we know this, and actually that will be the topic of the all Lila, it will come again with this Aishvarya and Madhurya aspect. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is hiding his Aishvarya, and basically only the Madhurya aspect of Krishna is coming. But time to times, this Aishvarya can pierce through, and we can see this Achintya Shakti of Krishna. And we have an example here with this unlimited number of cows and cowboys and cows. So as they were all starting to run toward the forest, there was a millions of sound of horns, a millions of sounds of flute, and we could hear the boys laughing and shouting as they were entering the forest. The boy had been ornamented by their mothers with jewel, crystals, and many opulent paraphernalia, but the boys did not like that so much. So as they were entering the forest, they just stopped and they just removed everything and put it behind bushes and decorated themselves with flowers and twigs. And they will take mineral powders, and with that they will mix with water and paint each other and make beautiful designs on each other. This was their preferred decoration. They did not like so much jewels and gold and all those things. Sometimes as they were running in the forest, sometimes Krishna will run ahead to see the beauty of the forest. And then the boys will run after Krishna and will make a competition who will be able to touch Krishna first. Sometimes even Krishna will go so fast that they will lose the sight of Krishna and they will become very anxious. Where is now Krishna? But because Krishna is a very amazing fragrance, because Krishna's body is very, very fragrant, when they will lose the sight of Krishna, they will just take a big breath and feel where Krishna is going. And then they will again run and run and make the competition. Who will be able to touch Krishna first? And then they will finally come and touch Krishna. They will ask Krishna to confirm who was the actual winner. So they would also have a festival of stealing. Sometimes they will steal the lunchbox of one of the cowboy, and they will put this lunchbox in the middle of a thorn bush, or where there was a lot of red ants, little tired. They will put the lunchbox that they were steal in this place, and then the gopa who would have his lunchbox stolen will cry, and then they will take it out and give it back to him. Sometimes they will take it and then take the lunch bag of one cowboy and then give secretly to another gopa, who will give to another gopa, and the one who had his lunch bag stolen will be looking in all directions to find it. Sometimes they will steal the flute or bugles of each other and they will say, "This is mine, this is mine," and then they will throw it away. And then they will go and pick it up and bring it back and say, "No, it is yours. Please, take it. In this way, they will enjoy a festival of stealing. Srila Prabhupada gave a very, very beautiful purport in this place where they enjoy these stealing pastimes. Srila Prabhupada said, "Krishna comes down in this material world to teach us how we can enjoy in the spiritual world." So he's coming to do those pastimes so that we know how we have also this opportunity to be back in the spiritual world and play and enjoy with him. Not only he comes down, but he personally displays pastimes in Vrindavan and attract people to spiritual enjoyment. So by doing his pastimes here, he's giving us a glimpse of what is waiting for us in the spiritual world. He's giving us an appetizer for us to understand, actually, here is not my place. Here is not really this ecstatic relationship with Krishna. It's very difficult here. I need to somehow bring myself back to the spiritual world. There are a few verses of Srimad Bhagavatam that give amazing description of the place between the cowherd boys. The cowherd boy will imitate the buzzing of the bumblebee. They will imitate actually all the animals, the voice of the cuckoos. Some boys were imitating the flying of the bird, and they will follow the bird in the sky, and then they will follow the shadow on the floor and try to go as fast as the birds. Some they would imitate the posture of the swans, the dancing of the peacocks, and some they will just silently sit next to the duck and look at them. Some they were imitating the monkeys. They will go up in the tree where monkeys were, and they will sit next to the monkey and they will make funny face to the monkey. The monkey will become scared. I mean, usually the monkey make the funny face back to us and we become scared. But in that time, the monkeys were becoming scared and will jump off the tree. And the gopas will also jump off the tree and follow the monkeys and jump after them. They will sometimes go to the river and imitate the frogs and jump like the frogs. They will sometimes dance with exaggerated steps. And then they will laugh and laugh by seeing each other dancing in that way. Sometimes they will hide behind a tree or behind a big rock. And when Krishna will come, they will very strongly blow in their horn to make him surprised. And Krishna will burst out in laughter. Here again, a very interesting comment from Srila Prabhupada. He said that those cowherd boys, they had accumulated a big amount of pious activities, and therefore they were able to associate with Krishna. But then, how can one explain their great fortune? Okay, sorry, there is a lot of notes, I'm not totally 100%. Hare Krishna Vachanda. So, here I had something that I don't understand exactly, so I just jump further. There was, again, they will play about running, but this time not running, who will touch Krishna, but they will play who is running faster. So they were running, running, and running, when suddenly they stopped abruptly. They were in front of a very amazing sight. They were in front of the mouth of Agasura. So they were running, running, and suddenly they stop and they see this big, unusual sight in front of them. Some became scared, and some young boys say, "This is a demon! This is a demon! Let's run away from here!" But some other boys say, "No, no, no, no! You are fool! How can a snake be so great, so big? This cannot be a snake. This is an ideal place for us to play." So there was Agasura, a very, very cruel demon. And Agasura, believe it or not, was the brother of Putana and Bagasura. He was the younger brother of the two, and he was very, very disturbed that Krishna had just now killed Bakasura. Bakasura was just the one before Agasura. So he was actually very, very envious and very, very angry at Krishna and wanted really to finish Krishna. The demigods were also very, very afraid of that demon. Although the demigods are all the time drinking Amrit, nectar of immortality, they were actually very, very afraid about that demon. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is written that any material arrangement for protecting oneself from death is always unsure. But if one is in Krishna consciousness, then immortality is confidently assured. So that's an interesting point. The demigods, although they were drinking this nectar of immortality, they were afraid of death. And Prabhupada mentioned that we can make all arrangements we want to escape death or to avoid death, but the only solution is really in Krishna consciousness. There was one devotee who sometimes would go to book distribution, and he will go to the life insurance company, and he will go to them and he will say, "I have the real insurance against death." You know those life insurance that if you die, they give some money to the family or things like this, insurance in case of death. So they will go there and they will say, "Those books are the real insurance against death." Mm-hmm. When Agasura was staying there still, and he was pretending of not being a demon, he was just waiting for the boys to enter, and he was hearing how the boys were laughing and playing with each other, and he was becoming more and more disturbed. And here we see also the enviousness. He's there, he wants to kill all those boys, and just to hear that they are happy, that they are laughing, and this makes him even more angry and even more disturbed. But Agasura was thinking, "I will kill those boys and I will offer them as a pinda to Bakasura and Putana." You know, a pinda is what we do usually for the forefathers. When our father or grandfather, they die, we do a ceremony and we offer sesame seeds and water in that ceremony. So Agasura was thinking, "I will kill them, and instead of offering sesame and water, I will offer them to as pinda to my brother Bakasura and my sister Putana." So here I have a little bit description of how Agasura looked. This is also for us to get a clearer vision into the Lila. Agasura was lying on the path in order to devour Krishna. He was a yojana in length. That means he was 12 kilometers long. He was as fat as a huge mountain. His mouth spread open like a cave. His lower lip touched the earth and his upper lip reached the clouds. The interior of the mouth was dark. His breath was hot and smelly, and his gaze was like a forest fire. Around his mouth were some creepers, some plants, and they were waving in the wind, and they seemed to give a sign to the cowboy, "Come in, come in, come in." One boy said, "Look here, look at this cave. It looks to be like a big mouth." And then, using his finger, he said, "And look there, it appears to be like the teeth of a serpent." And the very smelly breath, the wind that is coming out of this cave, seems to be the smell coming out of his mouth. So that means there were quite clear signs that the cowherd boy understood that actually this was a demon. Then the boy said, this big living creature is just there waiting to swallow us. If he's following us, he will immediately experience the same like Bakasura did. Remember, Bakasura had Krishna in his throat, and then Krishna became like burning, like fire. So the boys were thinking, even if we enter into the mouth of this demon, Krishna will do the same with him. So the boys looked at the beautiful face of Krishna. Krishna was a little bit at a distance, and they started to enter into the mouth of Agasura. They thought, as long as we are under the reach of Krishna's glance, we are protected. We don't risk anything. So all the friends of Krishna started to clap in their hands, and in the dancing steps and singing, they slowly entered into the cave, into the mouth of Agasura. The calves with raised tail were also following the boys into the mouth. Krishna looked and started to think, this is a snake. This is the demon Agasura. They should not enter that cave. And then Krishna spoke to them, don't go in, don't enter that cave. But the boy were just like continuing entering the caves. Krishna decided to stop them, but the boys did not listen to Krishna and just entered. Now, again, here we come to a very nice understanding of Krishna's person. We hear about Krishna Satya Sankalpa Shakti, which make everything Krishna wants happen. And now we are in the position Krishna wants them to not enter the mouth, but they still enter. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asked the question, was the Satya Sankalpa Shakti of Krishna defect? Was it maybe not working at that time? And the answer is actually because Krishna liked to serve his devotees. And his devotees, his friends, had the desire to go into the cave. This desire became over the Satya Sankalpa Shakti and could not stop them. Because he has also the desire to fulfill the desire of his own devotee. So in the comparison of the two Shakti, the Shakti of his love and service to his devotee was actually coming over his desire for them to not enter the mouth of Agasura. The boys, they enter into the mouth of Agasura. They knew it's a demon, but they wanted to be saved by Krishna. And they wanted to give opportunity to Krishna to make a new, wonderful pastime. So here it's very, very deep point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur met, also in connection with this Aishwarya and Madhurya, this sweetness and this opulence of Krishna. I think I will have to read it because it's a little detail. The boys were feeling secure in entering the mouth of Agasura by knowing Krishna's potency. That means the boys were aware of Krishna's Aishwarya, of Krishna's power of killing the demons. Usually, the Brajvasis do not connect much with the Aishwarya potency of Krishna, but more with the Madhurya aspect. That means even when they are aware of the Aishwarya aspect, or they see sometimes the Aishwarya aspect, they don't connect so much with it. They are much more focused on the sweetness, on the Madhurya. But when the knowledge of Krishna's potency is there, it does not empower the Madhurya, but increase the sweetness. That means when this Aishvarya principle comes in the picture, it do not overpower the sweetness. Like, for example, when Arjuna was front of the form, the Virat Rupa of Krishna, then the Aishvarya totally covered the sweetness. And Arjuna was totally afraid and said, please come back to your natural form. But in the Lila of Krishna, for the bridge basis, this Aishvarya never cover the Madhurya. This opulence never come over the sweetness. So here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, this is the base of the concept of sweetness. There is a mixture of Krishna's human quality and his unlimited Shakti. But the human quality is not overcome by the Aishvarya. Because there is a pinch of Aishvarya, and this is not overpowering the Madhurya, sweetness is increased. That means if Krishna will look like a totally ordinary human being, it will not be as sweet. That when Krishna is, they have this exchange of sweetness, but time to time Krishna let see this Aishvarya. So this, in the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is actually increasing in the sweetness of Krishna. It's a little bit, it's not maybe so easy to grasp it at the first time, and I don't know how, if I explain it so good. But if you read in Sarata Darshini, the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the 10th canto, you will get it a little clearer. So now the boys were in the mouth of Agasura, and Agasura was still waiting for Krishna to enter into it before he will close his mouth. He wanted the last one. He wanted Krishna to come in. So Krishna's compassion aspect, compassion nature, started to grow. When he saw the boys are in the mouth, I should go and help them. Usually Krishna is walking like an intoxicated elephant. That means slowly and moving his body. But when he saw that all the boys were now in the mouth of Agasura, Krishna ran and also entered the mouth of Agasura. My Guru Maharaj gave a very interesting example in this sense of entering into the mouth of Agasura. He said, the boys had heard Krishna, don't do that, don't go in. But they still went in. And it is also the same for us. We also hear all instruction from spiritual books, from spiritual master, do this, don't do this. But sometimes we know things are not good for us and we still do them. Sometimes we know this movie is full of violence, but we still we look at this. Sometimes we know I should be finishing my rounds, but we don't do it. So it's the same case for the cowboys. They heard, don't do it, but they still did it. So we are like the cowboys. We are often ready to enter the mouth of Agasura, although we have clear signs from sadhu and shastra that we should not do so. But when Krishna sees that his devotee enter the mouth, his mood changes and his karuna bhav, his compassionate attitude comes, and then Krishna comes to help his devotees. That means also for us, I mean, that's just amazing point Maharaj is making, that even for us, even if we are entering the mouth of Agasura and not follow everything like it should be followed, but Krishna's compassionate aspect will come and will protect us and will be with us. But if we commit aparad, then Krishna is at that time leaving us. Very, very deep point. So, as the boys were already in the mouth of Agasuha. The stomach of Agasuha was trying to crush them. And actually all the boys in the stomach of Agasuha fainted, like if they were dead. They fainted because there was not so much air in the mouth of the demon, but also because of separation from Krishna. When Krishna entered the mouth of Agasuha, Agasuha closed his mouth, and then the demigods who were in the sky looking started to say, "Alas, alas, what a disaster! Krishna is now in the mouth of the demon." But the demons were jubilant. They were also in the sky looking, and they were having a big party, seeing what was happening. They had firecrackers, and they were laughing and singing. Here is again one deep point. The devatas, they were aware of Krishna's power. The devatas knew how much power Krishna had. But the very nature of bhakti is to be affectionate. So that means although the demigod knew about that Krishna has all the power, when they saw him entering the mouth, they felt affection. And they felt like something, they forgot about Krishna's power, and they became afraid for Krishna. They became worried for Krishna. So, again, here there are a lot of deep points, but in our relationship with Krishna, we should also care for Krishna. We should also have this feeling of how can Krishna be protected, how Krishna can be happy. Also in our service to the deity, we should learn to care for Krishna. If you see in Vrindavan during the winter, all the pujari, they take some blankets and they dress the deities with warm clothes. This is, we could think Krishna is anyway beyond the gunas and beyond material nature. Why does he need to have something against the cold? But this is actually not proper. One should actually think of Krishna to serve him and to see him like a real person. We should never think that the deity do not need us. Actually, the deity is coming in our temple and is becoming totally dependent on the service that we are offering to the deity. So we should never think, yeah, anyway, Krishna is beyond the modes. If he don't get his meal today, it's not no problem. Anyway, he eats in the forest with his friends. No, this is not proper. So when Krishna heard, when he was in the mouth of Agasura and he heard about the... Sorry. Ram Gopal? You are with us? I'm sorry, I so few times you are a little tired, huh? Maybe standing up a little? Or it's okay? Okay, sorry. Be with us, huh?
Thank you.
I thought, okay, I'll let him rest, but after some time it just became too much. I had to say it. So when Krishna was in the mouth of Agasura and he heard the complaints of the demigods, he thought, okay, now I should really do something. So Krishna started to expand his body bigger and bigger, and that was also something he did not do until this past time. And the snake was also trying to become bigger and bigger to somehow bear the pain that was given by Krishna. So there was like a competition between Krishna's power and Agasura's power. But finally, the snake, Agasura, exploded like a ripe pumpkin. And that was the end of Agasura. Agasura, the soul of Agasura, came in the sky and was waiting in a distance in the sky. Usually we cannot see the soul, but because of the contact with Krishna, this soul was very luminous and was now waiting in the sky. And why was the soul waiting in the sky? It was there to show everyone that the soul is actually the individual person when the individual person leaves the body, always remain an individual entity, although it was like a light. And then this light, then Krishna came out of the body with the cowherd boys. Actually, the cowherd boys were in a fainting position in the belly of the snake, and Krishna glanced at them, revived them. And then they all came out of the mouth of Agasura. And then at that time, the light of Agasura, the soul of Agasura, went and merged in Krishna's body. Now, from Krishna's body, the soul of Agasura entered Krishna's body, and from Krishna's body, the soul went directly to Vaikuntha. And he got a special liberation. Agasura got Sarupya Mukti. That means he went to the spiritual world and got exactly the same form than Krishna in the spiritual world. So the question could be, why did Agasura got this chance when most of the other demons did not get this chance of having the same form of Krishna? Why did Agasura get this Sarupya Mukti? It is said that when the boys entered the mouth of the demon, they were so joyful and so jubilant that just by the association of the boys entering his belly, Agasura got transformed. His envy was already be cleaned away by the good association of the cowherd boy. And there is another very, very deep reason why Agasura got this liberation. When Putana, the sister of Agasura, had been liberated by Krishna, any one of you remember what she got? What was her next life? Yeah, she became like a nurse of Krishna in the spiritual world. So by now, Putana was a servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. At the time this pastime happened, Putana was serving Krishna in the spiritual world. So because Agasura wanted to revenge Putana, he wanted to do some service for Putana. And he was actually doing Vaishnava Seva, because now Putana was a devotee of Krishna. And because of that, he also got benefits and received Sarupya Mukti. Wow, the demigods were so happy. They started to sound all their musical instruments. Some Gandhavas were dancing in the sky. And they were all engaged in glorifying the Lord. And here Prabhupada writes something very nice about the glorification of the Lord. How important it is for us to glorify Krishna. The perfection of life is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, everyone should engage in glorifying the Lord. The decision of all great saintly person is that whatever qualification one has acquired should be utilized to glorify the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada mentioned that that's the opinion of all the great saints. Whatever abilities we have received, whatever qualification we have acquired, this should be engaged to glorify the Lord. One should be trained, Prabhupada continued, how to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Education, austerity, penance, or in the modern world, business, industry, education, and so on. Everything should be engaged for glorification of the Supreme Lord. Then everyone in the world will be happy. So the demigods were engaged in glorifying Krishna for his activities. And Prabhupada used this to underline that actually this is what we are supposed to do, that all living entities should use all their abilities to glorify the Lord. And Prabhupada pushed it even deeper. Jai Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada pushed the point even deeper by saying even in industries, even in our business, even in this modern world where there are so many nonsense going on, one should use all opportunities to glorify the Lord. So Krishna came in this material world. Why did he do all those pastimes? So that we can glorify him. So that we can see what he did. And after seeing his pastimes, we can just glorify him and glorify him. Prabhupada said, to understand how to glorify the Lord is actual research work. That means it's not so easy to glorify the Lord. If we want to glorify the Lord, we need to think very deeply. It's a research work, how we can properly glorify the Lord. Without Bhagavad Bhakti, without glorifying the Lord, whatever we do is just like a decoration on a dead body. That's Prabhupada's end of this purport. So in the sky were the demigods, they were glorifying Krishna, and in those demigods was Lord Shiva, who was extremely happy about what Krishna had done. And Lord Shiva started to dance like at the destruction of the world. And in his head there is like a cushion moon, like a small moon, and from this moon a stream of nectar started to fall as Shiva was dancing. And this stream of nectar touched the scales, the garland of scales that Lord Shiva has around his neck. And suddenly all those scales become living entity and started to dance around Lord Shiva. Krishna seemed to speak to Agasura and he said, you wanted me to come to your mouth? I came to your mouth? I entered your mouth? Why? It's not my fault what happened. You know, you wanted me to enter your mouth? I enter your mouth? And then you change. Then we change. Then you enter into me. Krishna was just contemplating what had happened. You wanted me to enter your mouth. I enter your mouth. Maybe I should read it. It will be clear. You yearn to swallow my friends, calf and I. To please you, I enter deep into your body. But when I was inside, you tried to go away from me. Your life breath ran outside. What is my fault? So after that, the dry skin of Agasura remained there and was actually a place for all the boys to go and play. And actually there was no bad smell at all. A little bit like for Putana, because of the touch of Krishna when they burned her body, it was smelling like aguru. The body of Agasura was not smelling anything bad because he had been purified by the touch of Krishna. When Lord Brahma heard about what had happened, he immediately came and was looking at what had happened, looking at the scene with the dead snake. And we will hear this afternoon with the Brahma Vimohan Lila, that's actually just following these pastimes. Brahma is now coming and looking what had happened. And soon Brahma will think, I need to try to test or challenge Krishna. So Shukadev Goswami ends the story of Agasura by saying that after playing for a while in this cave, all the boys went back to Vrindavan, but they told about this Leela to their parents only 1 year later. Now, by hearing that, Maharaj Parikshit became very enthusiastic to know what was the reason for that. And he asked Shukadev Goswami, but why? Why did they heard about that only 1 year later? And when Maharaj Parikshit was asking this question to Shukadev Goswami, Shukadev Goswami fainted. Shukadev Goswami went into a deep trance. Because Shukadev Goswami was just mentioning the pastime, and suddenly by this question he was remembered of all the pastimes that happened with the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And Shukadev Goswami just fainted. So here we see how Maharaj Parikshit is eager in his hearing. If I will mention that, how many of you would have asked the question, but why 1 year later only they know? Maharaj Parikshit was hearing very carefully, and we can see after lectures when there are questions, we can see actually how carefully the devotee have heard. When there are no questions, no comments, you might feel maybe they did not hear it really. They were somewhere else. Their body were there, but they might were wandering somewhere else. So I think I heard it from Lokanath Goswami about Maharaj Parikshit fainting in this particular time of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then all the sages came around Shukadev Goswami and were singing kirtan and playing instruments to revive him so that he could continue the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Lokanath Goswami who is saying that there was actually the son of Shukadev Goswami there. The son of Maharaj Parikshit. The son of Maharaj Parikshit, Janmejaya, who was there, and he knew that Shukadev Goswami could eventually time to times faint. So he had actually with him some drums, some conch, and his service was that if Shukadev Goswami would faint, he would have to be the first one to use this instrument to revive Maharaj Parikshit. So that was for the Leela. There are a lot of points in this Leela. So the flow was maybe not so good. I also never studied as deep as the previous one, so I was not as good to say it. But I would like to see if you have any questions or if you like to share also some details of the pastime. He got Sarupya. Sarupya means he went to Vaikuntha. First he was in the sky like a light, then he merged into Krishna's body, and then from Krishna's body he went to the Vaikuntha planets, and he got Sarupya to have the same form than Krishna. Most of the demons, they have Sayuja, they just merge in the body of Krishna. But he got Sarupya Mukti.
But I never understood why the voice came into the mouth of Agasura, because they knew that it is demon. Was it covering of Yogamaya?
As I have on my notes, they actually knew that it is a demon. That was not that they did not know. They knew it is a demon, but they wanted Krishna to make another of his pastime. And they were just remembering how it was when Krishna was in the mouth of Bakasura. What happened? So they thought, okay, we can go also in the mouth of this one. Krishna will also take care. So they wanted also to give opportunity to Krishna to make a new pastime. But you might get also different commentaries that might say a little bit differently. But according to the notes I have, they were aware of that.
So when the cowherd goes enter the mouth and there's complete no fear.
They were dancing, they were clapping their hands, they were singing. Doesn't seem there was any fearful emotions from the cowherd boys. The calves had a raised tail and would follow happily into the mouth of Agasuha.
Show us. So that we, when we stay deep in Krishna consciousness, also in our mood is no fear?
Definitely. Fear is opposite of Krishna consciousness. Fear, it's a symptom of not being Krishna conscious. When we are Krishna conscious, there is no reason of fear. That's definitely opposite. But we should obviously not think that we can do like the cowherd boy, that we can just go to the demons and associate with the demons and Krishna will just protect us like this. We cannot do the same like the cowherd boys, because the cowherd boys, they are there for the lila of Krishna. But in our life, although there was this point from Sachinandana Swami that even if we don't act properly, or if we enter in the mouth of Agasura by doing things that are forbidden, Krishna will remain with us and will protect us. But we should not do it just carelessly. Okay, I can just do whatever. Anyway, Krishna is there. I can cross the road without looking if cars are there. Krishna is anyway protecting me, or like this. That should not be seen in that way. Because he remembered all the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He did not want to go too much into the detail. He just said, yeah, and the boys heard about that 1 year later. The parents heard this Lila 1 year later. He did not mention more. And then Maharaj Parikshit said, but why did they heard only 1 year later? And then I think he just remembered about the pastimes of the Brahma Vimohan Lila, which is also very deep pastime, but I don't know why more, if there was a specific reason. I think just by remembering this pastime.
And why did they tell 1 year later?
This you will hear this afternoon.
Oh. Was it Madhurya Lila, or how to say it? This sweetness was very long, and this what Krishna had Shakti, Ishvara Shakti, was just momentary. No, what was stronger? Because the boys, they didn't have any fear. They were under this sweetness, and they went so straight into the mouth of the demon, being absolutely sure that they will be protected, always protected. And Krishna then, when they were already in the mouth, then he realized, he knew certainly, and he said, please don't come in. And then he decided he was not under the same, it was different Shakti, or what. He decided to, I defend, so my friends, so I'll show how it.
I can try to explain a little more. One of the points that was there is that actually there is all the time this sweetness. And there are time when this Aishvarya, this opulence come, like Asankhyata chaos, so many chaos, uncountable chaos. This is like one aspect of Krishna's Aishvarya, which is there, but which doesn't go over the sweetness. The sweetness always remains. And then they all play, there is so much sweetness going on. And then they come, they see the demon. And they are still into this sweetness, they still enter the demon and everything is fine. And then Krishna sees that and feels, oh no, they should not enter, and tell them, don't go in, don't go in. But they still go in. So this sweetness is still there, but the different type of energy are working. It's not the Satya Sankalpa Shakti of Krishna who make all his desire fulfilled, but is another Shakti, I don't know exactly the name, but is that he like to fulfill the desire of his devotees. And because this devotee has the desire to go in, then the Shakti allow them to go in. And now the boys were aware of the Aishvarya of Krishna. They were aware that Krishna was not just an ordinary boy, but he could protect them. Therefore, actually, they were entering the mouth without any fear, because they knew some of the Aishvarya. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said this tinge of Aishvarya, this tinge of understanding of the opulence of Krishna, is not overpowering the Madhurya. The Madhurya is still there, and it actually increases the Madhurya. It gives even more sweetness to know that Krishna will be able to protect them and that Krishna has those potency. So it's usually we always hear Aishvarya, Madhurya. We don't want so much the Aishvarya, we want the Madhurya. We hear also Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu explained that the Aishvarya, those who have this Aishvarya feeling, their love toward me is blocked. It's not allowed to flow so well. But here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentioned that in this for the bridge basis, to have this tinge of Aishvarya was actually increasing the Madhurya, was increasing the sweetness. But that's really a deep topic. That could be asked also to many other devotees to get. I'm myself not. I tried to understand, but I'm not so clear myself about.
So, so Mother Yashoda forbid Krishna to go in his picnic on his way. Yeah, so and she said, and then he said that, oh, in the name of God. And so what we said, so for us, that we are here living in a structure. And so now we hear, okay, in the name of God we can do what we want. So what is the conclusion of this?
I think if we are Krishna, we can do like him. But obviously, Krishna is often giving examples in his lila of how we should behave. But we should be able to discriminate that sometimes he's doing things that we are not supposed to do. Like we are not supposed to play flute and call all the ladies of Köln to a park during the night and dance with them. We are not supposed to follow everything Krishna does. Krishna is often giving teaching that we should follow, but therefore also we have gurus and sadhus who help us to get the difference. I mean, most of the time our common sense is there, but in this particular case Krishna can do it because he is God, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we obviously we need to follow our authorities and our
In the middle Krishna says, oh please don't enter Akasura, and millions of cowherds don't hear. So he gives an example with Mother Yashoda, and so
that's a lila where someone follow authorities. Yeah, that's true. Also, we hear that when devotees, they come to the stage of Raganuga Bhakti, that also they don't follow rules. I mean, they still follow rules to give example, but themselves, they are beyond the rules. So, obviously, in our stage, we need to follow all those rules. But this also might show that in the liberated stage, some rules might be given, but it's maybe not just necessary to follow them. Or it's maybe nicer to not follow them. But yeah, that's a nice observation of the two times of not following advice from a... In one sense, for the cowherd boy, maybe Krishna was not directly an authority. Krishna was just a friend. Like if a friend tell you, Ram Gopal, don't do like this, you might say, yeah, thank you for your advice, but I do what I like to do. So there was maybe not so much this notion of authority in between Krishna and the cowherd boys.
Yeah, you say also in the beginning of your thing, do they know that Agasura is sitting in the most custom?
Just
for the pleasure of Krishna.
In the beginning, some were not
sure. Some were thinking, let's run away, that's a demon. And some were saying, no, come on, how can that be a demon? He's so, how can that be a snake? It's so big, it cannot be a snake. Come on.
Behind what doing the other now.
How did you like Shiva's reaction? that was spectacular.
So I don't understand it so correctly.
The nectar of Amrit. The Amrit nectar came from the
sun and fell on the scales, and then they just all became alive and started to dance. I think that's Kavikarnapur as description.
I never saw a picture of your Gurudev, but only the Kali has that.
Lord Shiva might have also in some pictures, yeah. Okay, so should we go to the Anatta? Yeah. Time is also passing and today we have a long day. So, Agasura is one of the biggest demons and represents also one of the biggest impediment on the path. It represents cruelty or to be harsh toward people due to being envious of them. When envy is there in our heart, it causes us to disrespect and mistreat others. So when this propensity comes in our heart, instead of feigning or allowing this propensity to develop in our heart, one should immediately take shelter at Krishna and ask him to remove this tendency. The point is given that Krishna will always reciprocate according to the desire of his devotee. So if we are honestly or sincerely praying for the removal of those anartha, Krishna will definitely do it. Krishna was allowed to enter the body of Agasura, and in reciprocation, Krishna allowed Agasura to enter his body. So Krishna reciprocates accordingly to the devotees. That's the point. And the point is in connection when we really sincerely pray for the removal of anatta, Krishna will do it. So there was also in the anatta, this envy is also connected, where do I have it? With unwillingness unwillingness to help others to become Krishna conscious. That means this unwillingness to give the message of Krishna consciousness to others is also connected with the anatta of being envious. Like, I just want the nectar for me. I just don't mind for others to have the nectar. And this we can actually very often see how sometimes we are fighting to have the maha. I mean, which is also understandable to some extent. But very often we are just thinking, me, my advancement. But we don't have this willingness actually to give Krishna consciousness to others, to give service to others, to allow others to do what actually we wanted to do ourselves. So one of the remedy which is given against this envy is to be actively engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness. And then some merciful feelings will come in our heart and will transform this enviousness. If you want to know more about envy, Daksha in Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of envy. And one can read a little bit, I think there are a few chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam explaining how Daksha was behaving. And if you want to know more, you can read there. I did not develop it. I just have it as a single point. So Baladev Vidyabhushana, in the commentary of Bhagavad Gita, he's speaking about envy and he's giving a definition of envy. He said that envy is to see faults in an ocean of good qualities. Looking for faults, this is a manifestation of envy. So he is mentioning there are devotees who have an ocean of good qualities and we see the only fault or just the fault and point it out. This is manifestation of envy. Envy can also develop to when we feel bad about the advancement of others. Or we feel bad that others get more mercy than us. My Guru Maharaj smiled to my god sister and not to me. This is when we see others who get more mercy than what we would like for us. There we can see the manifestation of envy. Srila Prabhupada was often mentioning that he wanted ISKCON movement to be in society without envy. And Guru Govinda Swami was very, very often stressing that point. That it should be, when there is no envy, there is just like very, very beautiful collaboration in Krishna consciousness. But envy is very often something that do not allow the collaboration because we are envious of others. Then you do your things, I do my things. We don't want to collaborate so much. So Prabhupada had very, very much this desire of having ISKCON as a society without envy, where all the members are actually appreciating each other and collaborating and not have this bitter feeling of envy toward others. And envy is really a big, big impediment for our attempt of collaboration, our attempt to serve together the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Envy is really what is blocking this to go properly.
So, can I ask a question?
Short.
What is going on when this understanding comes not up in a congregation? So, when the authority to speak over that and involved to come in the congregation, and this understanding is not coming up, what is going on?
Basically, the reason of living in association with devotee, the only reason why we are living with devotees is that we want to make progress. And when we are with devotees, devotees see our black points. They see when there's envy is coming up. They see when we have other anatta, and then they can help us. They can show that to us, and then we can work on them. This is very often needs to be done individually, not in middle of everyone that you show, or hey, here, don't be envious, or things like this. That should be expressed in a eye to eye with the person. And it should be really, it's very difficult to be corrected, and one should really be very tactful and very intelligently trying to help the other Vaishnavas. And obviously the Vaishnavas themselves should be willing to learn and to be corrected. And I know that some spiritual master, they almost never say anything until the disciple come and ask. When the disciple come and ask Guru Maharaj, what do you see in me? What do I need to change? What are the things that are problematic in my life? Then often when the disciple opens, then the guru is cutting down and is showing, okay, this is wrong, this you have to. But I know few spiritual masters who all often wait for this opening so that they teach their disciples. So that shows how it's difficult to ask, to accept, to be corrected. So, but the reason, I mean, the main reason why we are in devotee association, it should not be because we have because devotees are kind, so I like to be with kind people, so therefore I am with devotee, or because I have, like sometimes they give this example, like a vege, I have a room and I can see the deities and then it's fine. The real meaning of being with devotees is that we get the chance from the association to make progress, that they mirror to us what are our anarthas, and that we can work on them and make progress. But there we need to be extremely careful in the way we bring them up and show them to others. And the devotee must be willing to accept that those anarthas are there and be willing to try to pray for removal of them. So I have just one or two last points. One is that in material consciousness, we always try to see our good qualities and we show to everyone their bad qualities. And in material consciousness, it is the opposite. We actually, in spiritual consciousness, this is the consciousness of the devotee. He tries to see his faults. He don't try to increase and to show everyone his good quality, but he try to see his bad qualities and work on them. And he's showing to everyone the good qualities of others. He's not telling the others, look, here, bad quality, problem. And we can see this critical tendency is so strongly rooted in our hearts. We were born in material consciousness, in material life. And so often we have devotees who are doing such good things and we are trying to see faults and showing faults to others. Oh, look, he's supposed to be a brahmachari and he was driving one Mataji to the airport. There were two in the car. He's not a real brahmachari. You know, think like this. It's actually very, very detrimental. I remember I had a little difficulty, not that I was envious, but little difficulty in one of my in my service with my Guru Maharaj. There was one thing he was doing and I was thinking maybe it's not proper, and it was all the time in my mind. And I mean, sometimes my Guru Maharaj will ask me for cake and cream, and I remember one day I really tried to make a cake for him, and I brought the cake and he said, Korahari, where is the cream? And I said, I'm sorry, I have just a cake. And he said, Korahari, eating a cake without cream is like reading without glasses. and I was a little bit confused. I was thinking, yeah, but he's supposed to be a sannyasi and he's asking for cream and cake. And, you know, it was on my mind. And one day, Radhanath Swami came to Goloka Dhamma, and I had to drive Radhanath Swami to the airport, and I was alone in the car with Radhanath Swami, and I thought, let me ask him what to do in this situation. So I asked him the question, like, Guru Maharaj is sometimes asking for cake and cream, and he's in the sannyasa ashram that should be sense control, and how should I deal with this? And he looked at me and he said, Yukumar has offered his entire life to Krishna. He's just like entirely dedicated to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. What's the problem if he wants some cream and cake? And then it was clear. Sometimes we might see faults, but we have to see the whole picture. And when we see devotees who are just so much engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness and so much that they have so many good qualities, if we see something that is maybe could be seen as a fault, we should not mind about that. We should be looking for the good qualities. Prabhupada appreciated very much this Vaikuntha consciousness, this consciousness where there is no envy between the member of the society. At the same time, if one devotee has a very prominent fault that definitely need to be corrected, then the devotees will look at that fault and will help the devotee to correct. But when it's not a prominent fault, when it's just a side, you can see like a deep conditioning of the person, an habit to put the sponge in this place and not in the other place, one will not make a big deal. One will not see this type of faults. But when it's a prominent fault, then it needs to be addressed and helped to be solved. So, I mean, envy, it's a big, big topic. This is what I had for today on my notes. I see it's also 9:20. Time is also passing quite fast. Do you have any... One question came up during the things. Was everything clear, or do we have more to...
I have one short question. Now you offer with love and devotion cake and cream to my guru?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not good in making cakes, so... But because I'm out of the service.